great. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Welcome into a live episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, here with the one and only Orlando Brown Jr. And the reason we're here, the president and CEO of Free Store Food Bank, Kurt Reiber. Thank you guys so much for being here, and thank you for having us back this year.
It's great to have you here. Yeah,
of course. I'm thankful. I appreciate you having me here as well.
You're good. Thank
so
you.
So we're here for a number of reasons, but there's some exciting things on the horizon that we're going to talk about that we wanted to bring Kurt on. So Orlando, I know this is your first time meeting him. Last year we held a podcast here with Ted Karras ahead of the Taste of Cincinnati event, and we really enjoyed it. So I'll just start with Kurt. Can you just tell us a little bit about some of the exciting things you guys have coming up here and some of the things that you want people to know about that's going on with Free Store Food Bank?
Absolutely. Fortunately, Orlando, We're glad we're keeping the offensive lineman coming in here, because you know, being an old offensive lineman myself, it's good to keep that that target going. But here at the Free Store Food Bank, we've got our Taste of the Bengals coming up this coming Wednesday. You can get your tickets at tasteofthebengals.org or go to freestorefoodbank.org and learn all about that. But it's a great way for us to rub elbows with the Bengals players, you know, talk to some of the coaches, you know, maybe give Zach Taylor a couple, pointers and things like that. No, really. It's been a great way for us. This is our 20th year that we've been doing it with the Bengals organization. They've just been tremendous partners of ours. But also this year, they're going to be unveiling a commemorative T-shirt. And this is being designed by Elizabeth Blackburn. And the proceeds of that T-shirt are going to come to the Free Store Food Bank, and it's going to be part of your orange out. I mean, I know you guys are all looking forward to having the orange. I mean, when you look at the Paycor Stadium and the way it's all set up, when you've got all the people out there in orange, it's going to be really awesome. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, on Labor Day weekend, we're going to have our 30th annual Rubber Duck Regatta. We have the ducks here, but those ducks, over the past 30 years, have allowed us to raise over $1 million every year to feed hungry children. And there's 85,000 kids in our tri-state area that don't know where their next meal is coming from. 8 out of 10 kids are eligible for free and reduced lunches at school. So when you think about that impact these little rubber ducks have, and they're really easy to buy. I mean, you just go to rubberduckregatta.org and get your ducks. You know, we encourage, while they're only $5 a piece, we encourage folks to get more than that, because if you buy $25 worth of ducks, then you get a 6 duck free. So it's really a way for them to, you help them swim more in groups as opposed to by themselves. The other thing that we're focused on right now is just getting our power packs out and our school pantries set up. Kids are going back to school right now, and it's a big challenge. We have over 75 school-based pantries. We also distribute over 220,000 power packs to kids for the weekend. So they go from lunch on Friday to breakfast on Monday, and they don't have anything when they're going home to those empty cupboards and empty refrigerators. So our power pack program is really something that we distribute out through 110 different school sites and really making a difference for those kids, because we talk about a hungry child can't learn and an uneducated adult can't earn. And then in about 4 weeks, we're going to be graduating our 206th graduating class of Cincinnati Cooks. Yeah, that's been going on since 2001. And we've graduated over, between our first course program and our second course program, over 5,000 graduates that are out there working in a lot of the area restaurants. And some of them actually will be represented at our Taste of the Bengals event this coming Wednesday. So we're just thrilled to have folks like Orlando stepping up and really being our host player for the Taste of the Bengals.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I mean, you touched on it all right there, man. And, you know, those are all things that are important to me. You know, I was very fortunate growing up not having to necessarily experience those things just because of the opportunities that my parents had. But, man, to have friends that experienced that, and, you know, I'm buying them lunch during school, or they come hang out at my house for the weekend and eat as much spaghetti as possible, that's always hit home for me.
Yeah, no, I tell you, and that's the thing, is we have so many families. You know, this is a tremendously caring community in the tri-state. You know, we have a lot of corporate sponsors and corporate supporters but it's the single individuals. And a lot of times people say, geez, you really want those big dollars, you know, the big donations. And we're not going to turn those away by the means. But for every dollar that we get in, we can provide the equivalent of three meals. And, you know, so when I was thinking about our ducks, for every duck that's sold, we can provide the equivalent of 15 meals. So you know that we're leveraging those resources. And 94% out of all the funds that come into the Free Store Food Bank stay right here and are going to our services. So that's incredibly important because we try to be good stewards of the resource we get in.
Do you have any specific questions that you wanted to ask Orlando?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of folks, I mean, you know, Sam Hubbard's been a good partner of ours, yep. Hometown guy came and, you know, was drafted by the Bengals. When you were drafted by, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, I mean, that had to be really special for you.
Oh, yeah.
But then you went to Kansas City Chiefs, and there's a little bit of tension, friction there.
A lot of tension and friction there.
I'm wearing bright red.
Then you come to the Bengals. I mean, I'm not sure if I don't know if you're creating some friends or enemies that way, but it's got to be a bit of a challenge when you leave your hometown team and go to one of the AFC rivals.
Me and her have had this conversation before off camera, just in the locker room, but it was very hard for me to leave Baltimore just because, as you mentioned, it was home for me, man. Yeah. And not only was it home, I grew up in that building. You know, John Harbaugh, when he took the job, I would be a ball boy at those training camps, or, you know, be going with my dad to OTAs. And I remember when I started playing football in middle school, I would go get my football gear from the Ravens. And so, I spent a lot of time around all of those men in there, all of those people, even the janitor and, you know, the people cooking food. I mean, I would literally, when I was a kid, I'd go in there and eat probably 2 pounds of chicken salad every Saturday. So, I had all of those memories, all of those feelings. And, man, for me, it was more so about, a conversation that me and my dad had, knowing that to strive and be the best me. And for me, I've always had a dream of playing left tackle in this league. Yeah. And, I had that opportunity. Obviously, in my third year, and I feel like I had a great year. I made my second Pro Bowl, and I remember going to the general manager Eric DaCosta and requesting a trade and letting him know. And he was heartbroken, just as heartbroken as I was. But man, it did me a good deed, sending me to Kansas City. Believe it or not, and I was able to go there, make another two Pro Bowls, win a Super Bowl, yeah. play. You know, obviously with a bunch of great players, great organization, and then which landed me here, man. And honestly, not to take anything away from my story, I wish I could have started it here, but at the end of the day, I believe in God's timing, and I believe everything happens for a reason. I wouldn't want to be playing for any other organization in the world. This city is so special. This team is special, man. I love everything that the city of Cincinnati has to offer.
Well, I tell you, the Brown family have really stepped up, not only for the Free Store, but for our community as well. And I think, signing you in the off season was just a tremendous, plus for the organization, because I think, you bring that winning culture and really, try to make that, something that, permeates through the entire locker room. And that's really important when you think about, the chemistry, especially on the offensive line, that's tremendous.
Oh, yeah, it's extremely important. And, it's very similar, to obviously being a part of something like this where, you got to understand and know the people around you and know how everyone, thinks and figure out a way to kind of have maybe not always the same, but a similar perspective. And so, man, I'm thankful they took a chance on me, man. I'm so excited for this year. Well, I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, I'm excited for this year. Absolutely. We're thrilled to have you here.
Do you want to talk any more specifically about the Taste of Cincinnati event to the people that might be listening that haven't ever been? What can they expect at the event?
Well, the Taste of the Bengals is something that is really, it's a party with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that's really, when you think about it, we'll have over, probably 50 of the area's best restaurants that bring their dinner by the bite. We have some great adult beverages, but also we have some silent auctions, some live auctions. I mean, we've done dinners with the the offensive line. We've had we did fouling with the special teams. We've had folks, the defensive backs go out to Top Golf. So there's a lot of things that you have definite interactions with the players. But it's a one way for us to really raise awareness of the impact of the Free Store and the work that we're doing, because the Bengals reach so many different people within this tri-state community, and the power of that event is that we have folks that are foodies that come to taste the food and enjoy the food. We have folks that love the Bengals that just want to come and rub elbows and get pictures and take autographs and things like that. And then you have people that love the Free Store. So you have a group of folks that come there, and it usually sells out. So I would say, if there's a few tickets left, now's the time to go to tasteofthebengals.org and get your tickets. But more importantly, those tickets will provide 225 meals for kids right here in the tri-state area. And that's huge when you think about the money that's staying right here, being right here. And this community is just rallying behind not only the Bengals, but the Free Store Food Bank.
Amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah.
So I guess we just keep it in the offensive line. I mean, Ted Karras was last year. Yeah. You're this year. You're going to have Alex Kappa next year. Cordell Volson.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well, do you want to – I think that it would be good to start with your story, because I think that a lot of – people know a little bit about your backstory, but I don't know if they know all of it.
Yeah.
So it's rare that I get this time with you without, a ton of other people asking for your time. So
yes.
I'm really excited to dig into your story.
Me
because
too.
It's really interesting and it's really inspiring. And I think that people are really going to enjoy to hear it.
Yeah.
So we're going to cover everything and we're going to have some fun.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. So for those that aren't quite sure of Orlando's story, where would you like to start? Should we start with how you got into football, who your dad is? Where would you like our journey conversation to start?
Man, I mean, it just depends on how much time we have. This might be a 12-hour conversation, but no, I would just start by, obviously I start with my parents, or I guess my grandparents, both sides. My dad's parents were from South Carolina, very southern county, McCormick County, South Carolina, right at the bottom, close to Augusta, Georgia. My mom's parents were both from Louisiana and kind of migrated into southern Texas, Houston, Texas, and they moved to Cleveland. My mom's parents had my mom and all her siblings in Cleveland. My dad was born and raised in Washington, D.C. So they had very rough backgrounds. They had they had been through a lot, and my dad was fortunate enough to go to an HBCU, South Carolina State, make it to the NFL. He had a very, very, very long, hard process to get to that point, and he was able to make out a 13-year career in the league, and he was starting right tackle for 12 years of that 13-year.
Let's get into that.
Yep.
Because you aren't you without your dad.
Oh, for sure.
And he has inspired your football journey so much.
Yep.
And so you just mentioned your dad had a long career in the NFL playing for the Baltimore Ravens as a right tackle. What age were you when he really got you to start understanding what was going on with football?
Yeah, I would never forget the game. It was they were playing the Buffalo Bills on a Sunday at 1 o'clock in October. I was 8 years old. It was 2004. This is funny. But I was 8 years old, and they were playing the Buffalo Bills. Willis McGahee, I believe, was a running back, or Marshawn Lynch, one of those two on the opposite team. And I feel like that was the first game I watched as a fan, and I was like, I understand it, and I want to do this. Yeah. And, obviously I had memories and feelings before that as well, but I feel like it was that moment for me that I was just like, okay, I get it. At 8 years old, one of my dad's, second to last year, I was like, okay, I see what's going on.
So your dad goes by Zeus.
Yep.
To those in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. He's known for that name. How did the Zeus nickname start?
Yeah, so it's a funny story. I always use here to tell it. But he was a bully in college. And the Zeus nickname kind of it came from that. It was literally he quote unquote ran the campus. This is from his college teammates telling me the story. So he wouldn't tell me this, but he he ran the campus, and out of fear, people called him Zeus, like a Greek god. So that's as far as that's as much as I know.
How come you don't go by Zeus Jr.?
So I differ from my dad. I differ from my dad in a lot of ways, which is a good thing. He kind of pushed me to be this way. As I mentioned, he grew up in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s. That's rough. So I didn't have to necessarily grow up with that type of persona, that type of perspective. So I just never went by it. He would call me Little Zeus, but that's just because I'm junior.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about the part of your dad's career that is very publicized in the incident where he was hit in the eye with the flag.
Yep.
How old were you when that happened? And can you explain a little bit of the situation to those who don't know what happened?
Yeah. You know, I've never talked about this on camera. This is crazy. So,
is this okay?
It is. It absolutely is. I'm in the NFL now. I don't mind. So there is a whole conspiracy that, I mean, I can't even call it conspiracy because it was finalized in court, out of court, because it was, you know, they were able to prove whatever they were able to prove through evidence. But long story short, I was 3 years old. Believe it or not, I do remember being in the suite in Cleveland,
wow,
the Cleveland Stadium, yes. My grandmother was there, my grandfather, my mom, my aunt, a bunch of family members. And I remember not necessarily the incident of seeing him get hit in the eye. I just remember seeing my family's reaction. But it was a holding penalty on him or a dead ball penalty on him. They threw a penalty flag. Jeff Triplett, the referee, threw the penalty flag. It hit him in the eye. And, it severely injured his eye and his eyesight for a while. And he retaliated. He came out back on the field, pushed the referee down. They suspended him in the NFL for 2 years. And, long story short, he hired Johnny Cochran and Robert Shapiro. And he settled won a lawsuit settlement against the NFL. And then he was able to come back and finish his career for the next 3 or 4 in Baltimore. But, it was a very tragic event, honestly, for my family, because I feel like that event, you know, to some extent, man, caused a lot of differences in my family's life because, it was so much that went into that. My parents separated after that shortly. We moved back to Baltimore. I was standing there that my dad was going through some things emotionally that I wasn't able to see him for about a year, year and a half in between there. And so, cause he was training and stressed out and going through all these different feelings and emotions.
When you talk about it severely damaging his eye, what did he do to get his eyesight back to where it needed to be to live functionally and not even just talk about playing football, but just to be able to drive a car or do the things that you need full eyesight to be able to do?
Yeah, I think it was just time. Honestly, I think it was just time that it took. It took about, I want to say, close to 2 years for it to, I believe, gain back everything that he kind of needed for it to work. But even up until the point where he passed away, I mean, it was never 2020 again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so since we're talking about your dad and football, I think it's important to bring up the fact that he, from what age did he start telling you, son, you're going to be a left tackle, not a right tackle?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I can remember, any time that I was watching a football game, he would tell me not to watch me, but to watch Jonathan Ogden. And he, you know, he'd tell me, man, when you watch football, don't watch the quarterback. Don't follow the ball. Don't watch the running back. You may relate to this a little bit. He mentions, always watching the left tackle. Mm-hmm. And so as early as I can remember, that was something that he always mentioned to me because, I think he just kind of understood the magnitude of the position.
Right. And the reason for that being left tackle is more glamorous position. Mm-hmm. You can say it's arguably one of, if not the most important position on the field because of the job you do protecting the quarterback's blind side. Yeah. I read that in high school, your high school coach wouldn't put you at left tackle, so your dad made you play defense?
Yeah, no, it was crazy. He wouldn't, he would not. I was too big. I mean, I was 450 pounds as like a high school freshman. Yeah, a lot of food. And so, I was huge. And I couldn't move all that well. And so he said he wasn't going to play me at left tackle. They said they wanted to play me at right tackle. My dad was like, listen, if you're not going to play him at left tackle, play him on defense. So I played defensive tackle my freshman year. I might have had 2 tackles in 10 games.
So are you glad you packed? I'm very went back
glad.
To offense?
Very glad I went back to offense.
When you talk about the impact your dad has made on your life to the point now you are a father, you've built a successful career on the field, but you've also built a successful career off the field. And I know, you know, you have plans for the things that you're going to do off the field, and I'm sure you're going to share them with me. But how much has your dad impacted your life?
Yeah, a lot. You know, I think just as we were talking about here with everything that, you know, the food bank represents, so much in life is about perspective and what you see and what you experience and being able to see things through someone else's eyes or perspective. And for me, he was able to implement those things for something as simple as cleaning up a park every single Saturday and Sunday throughout my elementary school days from kindergarten all the way to fifth grade in Marvin Gaye Park in D.C. Me and my brothers during the summers would go clean that from 8 in the morning to 12 in the afternoon every single Saturday and Sunday. And, man, I think for me that was such a humbling experience seeing what people go through. You know, obviously during that time it was D.C. wasn't necessarily as clean as it is today and as neat as it is. But I was able to, you know, obviously see people deal with homelessness, alcoholism, drug issues, you know, those type of things opened up my eyes and gave me of a sense of perspective. You know, I feel like that's the biggest thing that he pushed for me. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely does. Well, so we talked about kind of your start into your football journey, but I want to skip to college because as I was doing some research for this podcast today, I did not realize that you were a third round pick. I guess I thought you were a first round pick just because you're so good.
Yes, I always get that.
But what I thought was super interesting about your story is that you had originally committed to Tennessee, then you chose to go to Oklahoma.
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
So that's a story within a story. I'll give you the best version of it. So obviously I've always been well spoken. I've always looked, I guess it seemed, educated. And so in high school, after my dad passed, we moved to Atlanta. I was in DC at DeMatha High School. We moved to Atlanta. And so when I moved down there shortly after, my cousin committed to University of Tennessee. So I committed. They didn't look at my transcripts. They had no idea that my GPA and my ACT and SAT scores were bottom of the barrel. I'm talking 1.7 a cumulative GPA and probably a 13 on the ACT. I think I showed up and I went to sleep. Like I wrote my name and I went to sleep. And it's embarrassing, but I'll talk about it. So, you know, they didn't check my transcripts. And I'll never forget, me and my brothers, my mom, we go up to University of Tennessee 3 days before signing day, the last official visit weekend. And prior to this, I had missed an SAT test. My brother is a type 1 diabetic, and his sugar was low. He had went into a stoop, so I had missed the SAT test because I had to take care of him that morning. My mom was away. And I didn't tell this to the University of Tennessee at the time. You know, they just assumed I missed another test, which is understandable given the circumstances. And so we show up for the official visit, go through the whole week, and I could tell something's up. They tell me I'm going to be the last person to talk to Bus Jones. Me and my mom going there to talk to Bus Jones. And he tells me and my mom that he's not going to be able to give me a scholarship on signing day, which is 2 days away, because they don't think that I'm going to qualify. But they have some junior college scholarships, Garden City Community College, Coffee County Community College, Hutchinson. Like, I remember those three schools. And he was saying, you can sign here, and we promise you we'll honor your scholarship for you to come here. I told him, I was like, I'll think about it. So I got home. I talked to my high school head coach, Mark Fleetwood, who's amazing, man. He's always had my best interest, and he lost it on Bus Jones. He calls Bus Jones.
Former Cincinnati Bearcat.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
That's where the red is. Yeah. Not cheese red.
I love it. He gets on the phone with Bus Jones. He lets him have it. You know, he tells him, you guys got 33 commits. You've only got 31 scholarships, and you're taking his because of that, and this, that, and the third, and all this other business stuff. So we get off the phone. He gets off the phone with Bus Jones. Mark Fleetwood asks me. He says, you put yourself in a pickle, but where do you want to go? And I had never visited the University of Oklahoma. None of the coaches had came to see me. I said, Coach, something about the University of Oklahoma, I have faith in what they've put in the NFL with Trent Williams, Jamal Brown, Lane Johnson, Stocker McDougal, all of these, Davin Joseph, all of these different NFL players in my position. I knew that they had come through this university, and I told them, I said, look, I've never been, I know they haven't been out here, but I think University of Oklahoma is my home. And I'm not kidding you. He got on the phone, called the recruiting office, talked to the Miss Julie at the front that I know now, got on the phone with an assistant coach, got on the phone with the offensive line coach, got on the phone with the OC, got on the phone with Bob Stoops. And then the athletic director gets on the phone, Joe Castiglione, and Coach Stoops says to me, if I send you a scholarship tomorrow, you have to sign. And they sent it. I signed. I took my official visit April 19th, 2014. And, I mean, I showed up on campus, not ready. I redshirted, but it was a grind.
If only it was that easy for everyone else.
Yeah, I know, right? I got blessed.
So then you played your college career there. Yep. And then I think where your story gets interesting, if you don't know it, which you've been in Cincinnati now for, this is your third season.
Yeah.
I've followed your career for a long time, but I didn't even know until today. Your combine experience didn't go great for you.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, no, it was bad. Yeah, it was really bad.
But the cool thing about your story is it didn't that combine for a lot of people is, you know, what can put them on teams' draft boards or take them off by the way that they test. And I read that you didn't necessarily test great that day.
Oh, yeah, no, it was worse in history.
But then you made up for it at your pro day.
Yep.
But you didn't let that moment define what you were going to be as a pro.
Yeah.
What do you think when all of the draft experts were, you know, putting out their takes on what you could be in the NFL, you know, people would, you know, say you didn't necessarily have some of the other traits that other left tackles had, but you always had in the back of your mind that you were going to play, I believe you said a decade, and you were going to be a Pro Bowler and an All Pro, and you've already been a Pro Bowler. Mm-hmm. So what do you attribute your ability to forget the outside noise, but be able to trust the things that you do feel like are your best qualities as a tackle to make sure that those shine more than some of the things that you weren't able to have at that point?
Yeah, just having confidence in myself as a football player. At the end of the day, I met with I didn't meet with every NFL team, but every NFL team I met with, which was 29 teams, they asked me how I was going to run and what I was going to run in the 40, what I was going to bench press, what I was going to long jump, vertical. And I told him, I said, I will have the slowest time here. I will have the shortest long jump. I will have the shortest vertical. And I did all those things, during testing. My numbers weren't, any better than my pro day necessarily. My combine numbers were pretty bad, but even my pro day was still put me in last in almost every category. And, you know, I told every NFL team that. And so for me, I mean, I think I've always understood what my pros and cons are as a football player. You know, I try not to get in those positions. I try to maximize my abilities and my strengths using my length, my edge to the best of my abilities. And, you know, at the end of the day, the combine, you know, it was tough coming into the NFL, obviously, with, you know, that kind of smeared on my resume necessarily. But other players had done it. For me, you know, I knew what I was capable of. And then when the Ravens drafted me, I knew the system I was going into too. And so often coming into this league, coming into this level, that's an issue. People end up in the wrong place. You know, a lot of guys, and no matter the position, quarterback, wide receiver, running back, safety, you end up in the wrong system. And, you know, thank God it was Baltimore because, man, I mean, I knew right away when they drafted me, I was going to be able to excel with whatever they were asking me to do because I had seen it firsthand my whole life.
At any point in your career, I assume now because you've been able to make a name for yourself for so long now, but early on, was there any point in your football career where you felt anxious about some of the expectations set on you because of who your dad was and the type of football player he was in the league, especially when the team that drafted you was his team? Like, did that ever get overwhelming for you at any point?
Yeah, no, honestly, no. Like, I, my mom always, and my dad too, my mom especially, though, she always, like, made sure that I had a good understanding of that's what comes with it. You know, I've always been the biggest kid. I've always been Orlando Brown Jr., you know, and I've always, you know, played left tackle, you know, so I've kind of always been in the midst of it. And she would always tell me, you know, be yourself. Don't overthink it. Don't worry about anyone else's expectations. You know, when you play good, you know, when you play bad, you know what greatness looks like. You may not know how to do it yet, but, you know, trust that. And so, man, I give a lot of credit to my mom on that.
That's amazing. So you brought up the combine and how you were able to take a situation that might, for some people, ruin their draft stock to finding a way to turn it into a positive and saying, yeah, I might not test great, but here are all my strengths. Yeah. So you're drafted by the Ravens in the third round, and then you get to Baltimore and you aren't playing left tackle.
Yeah.
The Ravens at that point had Ronnie Stanley, and you knew at what point was it not going to work out in Baltimore long term because you knew you wanted to play left tackle.
Yeah, it was just when they extended him. It was so clear. I mean, he had probably he was a unanimous All-Pro. And it was, I mean, the best year of a left tackle probably since Anthony Munoz in 1987. Like, it was insane. He might have had two penalties and didn't give up a sack and maybe one or two hits in a season. And, I mean, he earned that whole contract. And so, I just kind of knew once he, because prior to that, there were question marks. Are they going to keep him?
Right.
We don't know. We may move you to left tackle in the future. We don't know what the plan is with Ronnie Stanley. And so they had communicated that to me, which, you know, to some extent was my motivation as a right tackle, that I'm going to have the opportunity to play left eventually. And so they extended him. And so it was just like, once they did that, it was just clear as day. Man, I wouldn't have minded staying there, but to me it was bigger. You know, it was a goal and dream that I had set for myself to not only get to the NFL, but to be a starting left tackle in this league. And so, man, I feel like once I kind of saw they extended them, you know, I understood I had needed to move on, and then which was God's timing again, man. Unfortunate for him, but I benefited obviously from his injury. I moved to left tackle. I make my second Pro Bowl, and I start almost a full season there. So, and that opened up doors for me to go to Kansas City, and now here.
Well, so let's move on to Kansas City. The Chiefs traded for you.
Yeah.
And you go to Kansas City. What were you thinking at that point?
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember one of the first people to text me was Pat. And, you know, I was super, super excited for the opportunity just because, I mean, everyone had seen that Super Bowl prior to that. I mean, they were playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and, you know, Pat was running for his life out there. So I felt like I was going into, a pretty good situation in the sense of, man, I can't do any worse than that. So no disrespect to my guys, but because I played in a room with all those guys. I feel like for me, I was super excited for the opportunity. And, you know, I enjoyed my time there in KC.
What was winning a Super Bowl like there for you?
Yeah, no, it was so much fun because to me, you know, my favorite part about Kansas City, honestly, I did not like the city overall. The Kansas City as a city is terrible. Stick me anywhere else but Kansas City. I enjoyed my coaches there. I had a lot of good relationship with my coaches. I was even closer to my teammates, and especially that offensive line room. So it was so special to be able to have the moments that we had off the field and to be able to go out there and accomplish that. I'll never forget, man. You see the clock. Jalen Hurts goes to throw the ball. He slips. The ball lands like 40 yards away from him. It hits the ground. Clock's double zero. And the confetti just starts going off like cannons. And, I remember, you know, looking at Frank Clark, and Frank Clark is so tired and exhausted from, you know, the season, and he's got tears in his eyes. And I see my offensive line coach and Coach Reed. It was a really special feeling, man, to you know, obviously get to that point, you know, throughout a season.
Do you know how happy I am that you guys are playing the Chiefs in week two?
Yeah, I'm happy too. Yeah, I'm happy too. I'm glad it's early this year too. Me too.
I won't have to pack a coat. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it might be 90 degrees.
I cannot wait. I'll take the heat over that cold any day. So you played how many years in Kansas City?
I was there for 2 years. Yeah, so I spent my first three in Baltimore. The year 4 and 5, 2 years in Kansas City. And then last year, my first year here, second year here.
So let's talk about how you got to Cincinnati, because that's still, I'll never forget the day that news broke that the Bengals were signing you, because you, as a reporter, part of the job is to project and predict moves that you think could happen based off of what you know about the team. Yep. So I had already written, you know, 5 players the Bengals could target in free agency, and you're taking positional needs and matching it with players you think are going to be available.
Yeah.
Well, none of us thought you were going to be available.
Yeah, me either.
And so, and everybody had kept it so quiet. Yeah. And I just remember my phone buzzing and I saw the tweets, because you were on NFL Live on ESPN that day.
Yep.
And I remember seeing you on TV. And then later that night, I think it was like 9:30 at night, I looked at my phone and it was a tweet that said, and I remember being like, wait, what? The Bengals are signing Orlando Brown Jr. And I just remember being like, wow, I didn't see that coming. But, like, what a great signing for the Bengals that feel like they knew that the most important thing to them was protecting Joe Burrow. They wanted better protection for him. And they went out and got one of the best tackles in the game. And then it feels like ever since that moment, it's just been like a perfect fit for you here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it really has. That whole process was crazy. Free agency is crazy. I remember, as you mentioned, I'm on the plane to Connecticut and to do ESPN on NFL Live, and my agent's telling me, hey, we've been talking to Cincinnati. When we land, we're going to talk numbers. And I mean, I didn't think much of it. I just was like, okay, we'll just see how this goes. You know, and then this was the place I wanted to be, though. So, you know, when we were talking throughout the whole process about places to be, I didn't know what the situation obviously was at left tackle, what their plan was with Jonah or anything like that. But this was the place I wanted to be. What Joe Burrow has done, man, I was this close when they beat us in 21. Here in Cincinnati, the first time we played, I was this close to going up to Joe, because I knew I was going to be a free agent after, I assumed they tagged me the next year. But I was this close to saying, hey, like, I want to block for you. You know what I mean? After we lost to them in 21, the game that I actually missed because of my calf injury. But, man, it was a crazy process, because they start talking at 6 a.m. They start talking numbers when I'm on TV. And I remember Adam Schefter coming up to me saying, you're going to have to sign a 1-year deal somewhere. I don't think, it's a little too late in the game. And I'm just remember thinking to myself, like, you have no idea, bro, what is going on. But, you know, and so, man, they were, my agents were in negotiations with a few different teams. And I, at the time, we're flying to New York, and I'm in New York, and the whole Bengals organization knows that the Jets have been in conversation with us as well. And so, man, I remember they came back with the final contract. And I mean, for me, man, it was about being here in this city, playing for this organization, blocking for Joe Burrow. And as he mentioned, man, being able to reset the culture here.
I believe you said that when you came to Cincinnati to sign your contract that you guys met. I think you said he came to your hotel room.
He did,
and you guys
yeah.
ate like burgers yeah, or yeah, something.
Yeah, we ate some Shake Shack. Yeah.
What do you remember most about? I mean, you talked about seeing him play and wanting to block for him, not even knowing his personality.
Yeah.
What do you remember your first impression of actually meeting him being?
Yes, I almost cursed. he's a great guy. I like great. Like, my first impression is so funny, because I wasn't expecting him to be so bubbly. Like, it was so, I know you're like, what? He was so, like, when we first greet each other in the lobby, he's like, man, I'm happy you're here. I'm like, man, I'm happy to be blocking for you, bro. And, you know, we were able to kind of share that moment. And, you know, we talked about football so much. I mean, I feel like over that 2.5 hour conversation, just about the city of Cincinnati, about the way that we run things as an organization, our offensive scheme, all his different cadences and how he calls protections, and Zach's mindset as a play caller, all those different things. It was so cool to be able to, like, that first time meeting him was crazy. It was a lot more than I expected, to be honest.
I didn't even know there was a Shake Shack in Cincinnati.
Yeah, no, this is in New York. We were in New York City. Yeah. Okay. So it just so happened to time out that the previous day, everything, as you mentioned, 9 p.m., everything comes out. And then he texts me like, congratulations on everything. Are you in New York? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I am too. Let's meet up for lunch. And I was like, cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it just ended up working.
How many burgers did you guys eat?
I had two. He had one.
So let's talk about your time in Cincinnati. You talked a little bit about the culture, but I heard a story about what you did last year, and I know it meant a lot to your teammates, but you didn't come in and just say, I'm Orlando Brown Jr. and I kind of know where I'm at with my career, and I don't feel like I really need to tell people like who I am. You really came in and wanted to make yourself a part of the locker room.
Yeah.
And I saw last year you got all of your teammates Uggs for Christmas.
Mandatory.
You gave them all Uggs slippers.
Yeah.
Why was it so important to you? I mean, what you can do on the football field speaks for itself, but why was it so important to you to jump in and show yourself as that type of teammate and leader in the locker?
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing with the mini mics for me, doing that in the locker room as well. It's important for me as a teammate, as a leader, even as a friend, you know, to know who I'm dealing with. And, you know, these are all men from different backgrounds and different experiences, different areas, walks of life, stories, relationships, whatever it is. And for me, man, I always want to be remembered for being that person, being that teammate that was, receptive and listened and understood. And so for me, it was an opportunity to, I guess, display my comfort with everybody. It was Ugg boots. I got everybody the Ugg boots that I normally wear, the minis. But it was just an opportunity for me to display that and show my appreciation.
What is unique about this year's team?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that.
Give me the coach speak.
I'm gonna give you the real. To me, I think it just starts with number 9. I haven't been here prior, so I can't really speak on prior to last year. But this is the most motivated quarterback I've seen. And when you have a quarterback focused like he is, determined, it doesn't do anything but intensify the approach in practice, intensify the way that the coaches script practice, intensify the way that the defense practices, all of those different things. And so his focus, want to and will right now, is on another level. And I feel like that's one of the reasons you've seen him out there every single day during training camp. Whether they've tried to take a day away from him or not, he's like, get out of my face. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. All of those different things. I feel like, to me, that's the uniqueness that really sticks out is, you know, that's our leader. And to be honest, man, the weight that is on Joe Burrow's shoulders is so much different than most places. And I say that because of the way that he handles things himself. Like, he puts a lot of pressure on himself to go out there and not only be great for himself, but be great for his teammates and the city, the organization. And, I feel like that's what I see is different this year, is his intensity.
I had a couple more questions for you, and I want to stay on the topic we're talking about. Yep. Tell us a little bit about what it's like being in the Bengals offensive line room. I mean, I feel like everybody, even if you don't know Ted Karras, feels like they know Ted Karras because his personality just shines through in the way he plays and through his interviews and the work he's doing in the community. But what about Cordell Volson and Alex Kappa and Amarius Mims? Tell me about what it's like in the Bengals offensive line room.
It's awesome. You know, I think, I got very fortunate coming into this situation. A lot of guys go into terrible situations, I would say, in the offensive line room. And I've been very fortunate, as you mentioned, to go in there with a guy like Ted, who I've heard
Your
from.
Your face just lights up talking about it.
Because these are my guys. These are who I go to battle with every single day. And, you know, I love them. I love their families and everything that these men represent. And, you know, it's so important to me. But it's so funny because I'll start with Frank Pollock. One of my first conversations with him, I'm not kidding you, I literally started crying because, like, we got that deep in conversation talking about football. And, you know, he played for one of the greatest organizations ever and dynasties ever with the San Francisco 49ers in the 90s. And so, you know, he's around Joe Montana, Steve Young, Bill Walsh, Steve Mariucci, all these greats, Jerry Rice. And so, Ronnie Lott, we touch on all those things, and I'm a football guy. Yeah. And so, me and him really connected well, and that kind of opened my eyes. This is my first day here, in Cincinnati when I had signed my contract. And so I met him first. I met Coach Frazier, our assistant O-line coach. I mean, amazing guy, one of the coolest guys ever you will meet from Colorado. You wouldn't know it by looking at him, but you have a conversation with him. It's like, man, this guy's cool. Yeah. This guy's cool as hell. And so, you've got him, and then I had the opportunity, obviously, as you mentioned, to meet Ted, that I've had heard about so much. It's so much personality in there with these men. And, you know, we have a real passion for what we do. Everyone is almost always on the same page with expectations. Man, and then, you know, you mentioned my man, Big Mims, that we drafted this year. I mean, he's going to be great. He's going to be amazing. They got a hit on him. We just got to keep my man healthy. But, man, he's going to be a great player as well, who's full of energy and loves the game too.
I know you won't talk about it yourself, but I thought it was really cool that the day after Amarius was drafted, they bring him to Cincinnati to do, you know, the tour and the media and all of that.
Yeah.
And you were there. And you did it because you wanted to meet your teammate and, you know, I assume to let him know that you're here for him with whatever needs. And I feel like it just showed the type of character you have. But why was that important to you to be there at that moment?
Yeah, you know, for some of the things you just touched on, like it was, I've been that younger player before and I wasn't a first round pick, but I came into a similar situation as a rookie, with having to, you know, sit behind a guy that they just paid. It wasn't free agency for me, but I guess it kind of was, but the guy that had just paid in free agency, you know, coming in, having to learn from, several other vets, it can somewhat be overwhelming, uncertain. You know, you always hear stories about, Ryan Tannehill and Will Levis. You know, you always hear those kind of stories. And so it was important for me to understand, for one, his family. I knew that his mom and dad would be there. So I wanted an opportunity to meet them and kind of know, you know, who is he? What is he about? And, on top of that, kind of let him know and his family know that, you know, I'm here for not just football related things, but anything that you need in life, you know, cause, maybe I may not have had the same exact money he had coming out, but, you know, I had a little something. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure that he felt comfortable, being himself and knowing the situation that he was coming into.
Well, since we're talking about him, I just wanted to ask, obviously you knew what people had said about him at Georgia. And I mean, you look at him and you just think, wow, like, you know, what a physical freak. But what point during training camp was there a specific practice and did he do a specific move or something that you felt like this guy, I mean, you just said he's going to be special. Like, what was the moment on the field with him where you saw the talent that he has?
Yeah. Man, this is an intricate answer, but this is the best way I can give it to you. So, for offensive line play, right, there are people that are extremely talented and they will win a certain rep with bad technique, right? Like, if I'm blocking Trey Hendrickson and I don't get my hands on him, he gets his hands on me first inside my chest and my hands are outside of him and I still win the rep. That's pretty impressive. That's like a talent. And, I saw him do something like that. It was against, Miles Murphy. And I mean, anybody else in this rep would have ended up on their back looking at the sky. And, man, he was able to recover on the rush, get his hands back, refit inside, and shut the rush down. And to me, I feel like that was the day I was like, all right. I had already had an inkling. We just hadn't seen him live necessarily in full pads. But it was at that moment I was like, yeah. I mean, they already knew that upstairs, though, that they hit on this guy.
Yeah, well, hopefully he gets back on the field here shortly. I just wanted to ask you, since you brought up one of the questions that was submitted when I posted on social media that you were going to be doing the podcast with me was, who is the toughest edge rusher you've had to face in your career?
Yeah.
Who?
Myles Garrett, for sure. I mean, I feel like, you know what? Hold on. You say career. So right now, Myles Garrett is the best in the NFL to me in terms of pass rushing ability. But best in my career is J.J. Watt. Mm. Yeah, I mean, man, I had some reps against him where I don't, as I mentioned, if my technique is perfect, this is the only person in my life, like not just football, not just NFL career, my life, that I've like, he beat me and I had perfect technique. J.J. Watt is, I mean, head honcho, top of the list in that, or creme de la creme, however you say it. He's the guy to me that, I mean, I feel like is the best pass rusher that I faced throughout my career. But currently, Myles Garrett for sure.
When you think about when you're done playing football, and you and I had a conversation the other day, which I feel like is a good way to wrap up our conversation, that I asked you what you wanted to do following playing football, and you talked about how you know you'd like to do something in the media. Yeah. I don't know if I'm giving away things you have planned, but the most interesting thing I thought about your answer was you told me you wanted to stay in Cincinnati.
You
want to live in Cincinnati, which I think is really cool, because for a lot of people, sometimes they ask, how'd you end up in Cincinnati, or almost like, why? Because, you know, you end up play however many years in the NFL, like, you know, you could live wherever you wanted when you're done.
Yeah.
You said that you wanted to stay in Cincinnati, and that really spoke to me about how much you like it here. Why do you feel like you view Cincinnati as your home?
Yeah. For me, it's just, man, it's all about comfort, and, you know, it's got that East Coast feel, but the Southern feel at the same time. You know, it's a city that's full of, more than you think, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like for me, just spending my off season here last year and really, I guess the last coming up on close to 2 years, I guess, which is weird, but spending the last year here this off season, just being able to sightsee and see some of the restaurants, things to do. Obviously, man, it's great for kids, which is awesome. I don't know. I love the feel of it here, and I love the energy. It's fast but slow. I don't know how to put it all into one word besides just, man, it's comfortable for me here. This is who I am.
Well, I know that all the Bengals fans are thrilled that you're here. And I just want to say thank you for coming out and doing this podcast. Thank you to Kurt for having us here. And special thanks to Kara, Phil, and Sam, who are putting this whole podcast together. Without them, this would not be a podcast. So I wanted to make sure we shouted them out. But thank you so much. And Kurt, I'll let you wrap it up.
Yeah, Kelsey, thank you. And Orlando, just great, great information here. But, you know, I just want to focus in on, you know, you talked about family, you talked about team, and that's what we have here at Free Store Food Bank. When you think about the team that supports us, we've got some tremendous folks that, you make, Joe look good, make Zach look good. You know, my team makes me look good each and every day, but they're doing the heavy lifting, the hard work, and that's what you're bringing to this table, and that's what you're bringing to this city. And, you know, the character that you're bringing, I mean, you've protected, some premier quarterbacks, in the league, but we think we've got the best.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I think one thing that you're bringing as well is a character that basically says you want to give back. And that's something that this city has done in spades, not only for the Free Store Food Bank, but for the families that we're serving, because these are folks that can't do anything for us, can't do anything for you. Yeah. And they're looking for help.
Yeah.
We're providing that help. You're providing that help. You're making a difference each and every day, because what we want to create is a hunger-free, healthy, and thriving community, and you're going to help us do that.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you. Thank you. You're the best. Appreciate you.